broadcasting live from the Regis Business Center and office suites at Satellite Place in Duluth, it's time for Gwinnett Business Radio. Gwinnett Business Radio spotlights and highlights companies in Gwinnett County and the people who lead them.
And hello again, everybody, and welcome to Gwinnett Business Radio. I'm your host, Mike Salmon, alongside my trusty co-host, Stephen Julian.
Morning, Mike. How are we doing this morning?
I'm doing good. I'm feeling, feeling alive today.
Wow. Yeah, that's fantastic.
Listening to some 80s music, you know, back to my youth.
And had a nice little cool fall breeze, so
loving the weather, too, yes.
All you need now is put some gel in your hair and get ready to videotape A-Team later tonight. Then you'd be really set.
Whatever happened to Mr. T?
Actually, he's doing the voiceovers in Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, too. Don't ask me strange trivia questions. I'll know the answers, Mike.
I'm actually scared that you know that.
Yes.
All right, joining us in the studio today for the show from Goliath Consulting Group, it is Jay Bandy. Jay, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Glad to have you here this morning. Tell us all about Goliath Consulting Group. What does your company do?
Goliath Consulting is a restaurant consulting company, which confuses a lot of people because we really are a B2B company. So just a little bit about restaurant consulting. We actually help independent restaurants and chains in a varied number of functions. I mean, we help them in terms of getting started up if, you know, they need real estate, construction, help if they need equipment, supplies, all the way to we do a lot of marketing for clients as well. And profitability is huge in the restaurant business. There's a big gap between what you might read in the press and what people really make. I saw something recently that said, you know, the average restaurant has a margin of 2 to 3%, you know, bottom line. It's not really true. A good restaurant runs about 20% bottom line.
I got a lot of questions about that because I know it's very the restaurant industry is a very difficult industry to succeed in. But and I'll get to that in a second. But but you help these folks then from A to Z. I mean, it sounds like from just the concept to helping build the physical brick and mortar to, as you said, profitability and marketing.
Absolutely, and we're a little unusual because most people specialize. In my whole career, as well as the folks that work with me, I've been generalist. And so, you know, I've gone out on construction sites for 25 years and helped people build restaurants. You know, I've helped people across the country with marketing. I've built, you know, operational systems for chains such as McDonald's, Blimpy Subs and Salads, et cetera. So we've taken our knowledge and the folks that work with me and really of doing the A to Z.
Well, let me ask you, how did you start the company? I mean, you mentioned some of the things you did beforehand. What made you decide to start a consulting group for restaurants?
I actually had this idea about 10 years before I actually started the company. And I was working for RTM around year 2000 and go, you know, I can do this myself.
I'll show you a little knowledge here, Stephen. You mentioned RTM. That would
correct.
Be the Arby's franchises, among others.
Yes.
You know, your knowledge of RTM is a lot better than my knowledge of Mr. T. That's useful knowledge, so well done.
All right, Jake, so continue, please.
Absolutely.
Before you were rudely interrupted.
So I left RTM. I actually worked on their chicken business, Mrs. Winner's and Lee's Famous Recipe, which were two brands they owned. And they sold those. And with the selling of those, I moved literally down the street to McDonald's corporate, which at the time was actually just two blocks away. And McDonald's had just gone through a reorg and reorged too hard, and they needed a bunch of people. So I immediately just kind of walked down the street and started up with them. And what was interesting at the McDonald's business was they didn't have generalists. They had folks that were very specific in the roles they had. And so within about a year and a half, a new position opened up in leadership here in this office. And so it gave me a chance to do everything again. And really, my time at McDonald's was just cutting my teeth to start my company. Really, from strategy to operations to supply chain to marketing, communications, I got to do all of that there at one of the premier, you know, companies in the world in food service. So it was perfect launch to start Goliath.
So, Jay, let's take the conversation from your background of working at McDonald's, and then you start your own company and you're working with, you said, independent restaurants. So let's think about an independent restaurant here in Gwinnett County. what are some of the main reasons why people would start to talk to you? I would imagine you cover A to Z, but I would imagine there's probably on both of our hands or one of our hands some key issues why people would call you, and it usually starts with help, I'm guessing.
Correct.
So what are some of those key things that people would go, oh, man, I definitely need to call Jay?
Well, a lot of times people just get in the weeds, as we call it, and they just, you know, they're starting to lose money or they're not making the money they used to. That's the number one thing we get is we get, you know, a lot of referrals from people we know in our network and say, hey, Joe down the street's got a restaurant. He needs some help.
So
he's
so
not making the money he should.
The inbox of invoices reaches 6 inches to 12 inches in height, and that's about when they start calling you.
They really do. You know, sometimes we get in way late, but, you know, it's interesting in this business. There's some simple things we go in within a couple of days and can turn around. It's just then changing behaviors in the business, which behaviors take a while.
So I'm going to give you a great question. That was kind of a hard question of because I know you would prefer to not come in the ambulance with the emergency lights going.
Absolutely.
So you're sitting in a room full of all the restaurant owners in Gwinnett County, all different sizes, all different shapes. And you get to tell them, listen, before it gets to here, here's when you really should be calling me, and here are the things you really should be looking for, some of the proactive steps that a restaurant owner can take. What are some of those steps that they should be talking to you about?
Well, the first thing we always do when we get into a restaurant is really dive into the P&L. Looking at the P&L and just finding out where the issues are, because we have some metrics that we use that are industry-wide, but that we drive home with our clients. So if their cost of goods and cost of labor is over 60%, we start there. And from there, then, it's diving into line items. And then we take a holistic look at the restaurant. So why is it that sales are X, cost of labor, cost of goods, et cetera? And sometimes it's employee issues. Sometimes it's location. Sometimes it's marketing. There's a whole lot of different things that go into that. So, but that's where we start. We dig in and really looking at the P&L. And so that cost of goods, cost of labor is the first place we start.
I can't think of a better place to start than your profit and loss statement. That's probably the main thing on everybody's mind.
We're talking with Jay Bandy with Goliath Consulting Group, and he consults with restaurants. For those that might be thinking about getting into the restaurant business, what kind of advice would you give them? What are maybe some of the biggest challenges they will face? I know the numbers, and I've heard some of the numbers, and you might be able to share some of them. You've got to work hard because most restaurants don't survive very long.
Correct. And, you know, we regretfully in our business, we do see people go out of business. I just had a gentleman go out of business a couple of weeks ago. He called me a week before he went out of business. You know, some of the challenges I see people going in, because I do talk to folks before they go into the business, it's generally capitalization. Folks don't realize how much money it costs to get into the business. And so going in undercapitalized is the number one reason that restaurants shut down. You need at least 3 to 6 months of working capital. That's a minimum. And a lot of folks go in with just enough money for their inventory. And those folks, if they have a bad month, you know, the summer wasn't great for restaurants. They can't weather that. They don't have any money in the bank to pay, you know, food, labor, all those important things you have to run a restaurant.
Absolutely. And I assume there are different challenges for franchisees compared to independent restaurant owners?
Yes. Independent restaurant owners obviously have control of everything that they do for the most part. And so they really have to wear a lot of hats, just kind of like we do as consultants. They have to really touch a lot of different things. Within the franchise system, folks have the opportunity to have someone behind them that's wearing a lot of those hats for them. So really they have to run the restaurant and follow the systems. The only caveat to that is some people don't like to be told what to do. And that's really what franchising is. I mean, it realistically, if you don't listen to your franchisor and you don't trust them, it's like a marriage. It's not going to work. And it's interesting. I've been in the franchise world for a number of years and consult the franchisors now. Franchisees have what I call as an aha moment. They're like a two-year-old for a number of years, and they fight the franchisor tooth and nail. You know, they cry about this, cry about that. And finally, they realize, you know, if I listen to these guys and do what they say, I'll be successful.
Well, they've been doing it for so long, and they are successful. You would think you would listen. I would think from the outside looking in that as far as a success rate, you would have more success being a franchisee compared to an independent restaurant owner because you already have kind of the whole setup, the history to go by. Would that be accurate, or am I way off base?
No, it really is. I mean, the franchise world really does make it easier for folks to get into business and stay in business. And again, I've worked for, you know, a number of franchise systems, as well as I consult the franchise systems from, you know, Cheeseburger Bobby's in town to Church's Chicken. So it definitely is the way to go if you want to get into the business.
So the silly question, Jay, is as people talk to you, they tend to get hungry, I would imagine. It doesn't take long. You're mentioning all these restaurants. I'm getting hungry here, Mike. So let me ask this question. You really do cover A to Z. You're a generalist. I like that phrase that you've used. You've talked about the profit and loss is kind of where you start. What are some of the areas that a restaurant owner doesn't realize is going to be a lot more important than they thought, or they might think, oh, I don't even need to give a lot of thought to that, and it's pretty important. What are some of those alternative areas that they really need to think about to make their restaurant more profitable, grow, and accomplish what they want to accomplish?
Well, there's really a couple of things. The first thing I run into continually with independent restaurants is they don't understand the concept of brand. And you can be, we're all brands, and we have our own personal brands. I have a brand as Goliath Consulting. And what does that mean? And folks don't get that. And so I'm with a client right now. I just started this week, and their brand is very confusing. Confuses the folks that work there, confuses the folks that go there. And when you look at it on the web, people are confused. So that's really one of the things that a lot of restaurateurs don't understand, that they really have to be very clear about who they are, what they do, and then how they communicate that. It sounds, you know, kind of 40,000 feet level, but it's so critical that, and a lot of folks, it takes some education for them to understand that because they're just trying to get the food out the door, you know, across the counter.
Jay Bandy with Goliath Consulting Group is our guest here on Gwinnett Business Radio. Jay, would you say there have been maybe some trends over the last 5 or 6 years that have impacted restaurants and their success?
Yeah, what's really interesting, just kind of following the brand discussion, is social media marketing has really changed how independent restaurants compete in the marketplace. You know, you can be, Joe's Diner down the street and compete with McDonald's on social media. You can get a Facebook account, you can get a Twitter account, you can do all those things. And it's really leveled the playing field, and folks that are creative really have the opportunity now to compete with the big guys. One of the other things that's really that we're excited about is the whole thing of sustainability, farm to table, and just getting food from around the local area and serving it at restaurants, you know, not flying food across oceans to be served at restaurants. It's not sustainable. You can't do that. So that's really exciting as well to us.
You mentioned when you first came on that you actually really are a B2B company. When it comes to consulting with the restaurants, how do you find the business? Do they typically reach out to you, or do you normally see an issue somewhere and say, hey, we probably need to have a conversation? How do you grow your business?
Yeah, that's interesting, because restaurateurs and chefs typically have big egos. I see stuff every day when I walk into restaurants, but I dare not tell whoever's there about it. So most of our business is referral. 90 to 95% is referral-based. We're members of the Georgia Restaurant Association. Those guys have really been good to us, and they, you know, definitely refer a lot of folks our way. But also it's our clients. I mean, I get 50% of my clients from my current client base referrals.
I would think, Jay, you can't go into a restaurant and just sit and have a meal without grading everything and looking at everything and saying this needs to be changed and that needs to be changed. I mean, I think I would hate going on a meal with you somewhere.
Sometimes it's distracting for sure, because sometimes I don't turn it off. And also I'm always looking for potential clients, you know, so you know, I've got a huge potential client base. So I'm always like, I was at a restaurant, I was going, but just shaking my head going, this isn't right. What happened? So, it can be distracting for sure.
So I'm going to throw out another corny cultural reference. I was replaying the episode of Friends in my head where Phoebe dated the health inspector, and everywhere they went, he was shutting down the restaurant. So everywhere you go, yeah, at some point, you kind of got to go turn off. Let's just enjoy this meal. Let's not. But you're right. Everywhere you go is a potential client. So here was the question I was going to ask. A lot of different a lot of different industries have different levels of competition. What kind of competition is there in restaurant A to Z consulting?
There's really not a lot. It's
because I was going to say, clearly the way you're talking, you can separate yourself from whatever competition's out there. But I guess this is now a pretty unique niche for you.
It really is. There are folks in town that specialize, for example, in service or training that are kind of build and design folks that will get folks started. But there's not very many folks across the country that do the whole restaurant business in totality. And it's just, you know, I was lucky enough in my career to have that knowledge and now to be able to share that with restaurateurs across the country.
Jay Bandy with Goliath Consulting Group has been our guest. And Jay, for those folks that are thinking about, that are listening and thinking about opening a restaurant, or they're already in the restaurant business, what's the best way to find out more about you, to find out about your company, and get in touch with you?
The best way to find out about our company, we do have a website, goliathconsulting.com. We're also on Facebook. We're on Twitter. You can find us on Google Plus. So we're very social. Also, you can reach me directly, Jay Bandy, at getresults@goliathconsulting.com.
Stephen, I actually take back what I said to Jay. I think it actually would be kind of fun to go to lunch with him one time and just kind of see how he sees things through his eyes.
That's absolutely. I just would want to go to lunch with him based on his client list. So.
I was going to ask, do you still get free meals at Arby's or anything like that? Do you have any insights for us? One of my favorite places, by the way. Jay, thank you so much for your time. It's been very insightful.
Thank you very much.
All right, Jay Bandy with Goliath Consulting Group. Joining us now on Gwinnett Business Radio from the Japan-America Society of Georgia and Japan Fest, it is Yash D'Amato. Yash, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for having me.
Tell us about Japan Fest. Now, folks that are in Gwinnett County, I've heard about Japan Fest, but it's coming up shortly. Tell us about the dates and what Japan Fest is.
Yeah, Japan Fest is just coming up in a few days, actually, this weekend, September 21st and 22nd. It's a Saturday-Sunday weekend festival. It's actually the largest Japanese cultural festival here in the southeast. And then it's right here in Gwinnett County, just right down the road from here. But Japan Fest is pretty much anything you can think about Japan, it's there. Certainly Japanese food. Maybe Jay can come out and do some consulting and work with us with our food vendors and restaurants that will be there. But, yeah, we have certainly Japanese food, Japanese performers from music, dancers, Japanese exhibitors, vendors, all sorts of shopping and children's area for kids to play games, Japanese games. And then this year's theme actually is Japanese performers and entertainment. So we have actually six guest performers coming in. They'll have a 30-minute performance on each day. We have taiko drummers from Orlando. They play at the Epcot Center with Disney. Matsuriza will be there. Bunraku Bay Puppet Theater. It's a very traditional puppetry arts that they're coming. They're going to do a performance and a workshop on each day, Saturday, Sunday. We'll have Kumiko Yamamoto, who is a Japanese mime theater. She does a lot of work with kids and does a lot of performance that's very interactive with the audience. Yoshi Yamao, I like his first name just like mine, but he is a samurai kind of Bushido expert, and he does a samurai show on each day. So that's going to be a lot of fun. We also have something unique, a Japanese tap dancer, Kazunori Kumagai. And then actually we have someone from North Carolina, Akira Satake, who is a banjo player and a shamisen player. So he's an expert with string instruments. So that's our lineup for our performers. Certainly we have local performers coming out as well. So it's a lot of fun. About 20,000 people come out each year. So it's definitely a great event for the family and for the kids.
Yoshi, you've done a great job of saying what's happening at the fest. Let me ask a couple of quick clarifying questions, because you said it was this weekend, September 21st. So where exactly is it here in Gwinnett County?
Yeah.
And then also, how long? You said you've had certain crowds in the past. How many years has this been going on?
Well, this is actually our 27th year.
Wow.
Of Japan Fest. So we've done it every year for the past 27 years. And it's actually at the Gwinnett Center.
Okay.
So just right down the road on Sugarloaf. It's apparently the largest event at the Gwinnett Center. Not at the arena, obviously. We know they have big concerts and I think
we'll give it 10 more years, yeah. And you guys will be the biggest event at the arena,
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, exactly. So it's Saturday, September 21st, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., and on Sunday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m.
Now, who organizes this event?
It's organized by our organization, the Japan America Society of Georgia, and then the Japanese Chamber of Commerce of Georgia. The planning period is pretty much all year round. As soon as we're done with this year, we're planning for next year. But we've fine-tuned all the details, and we're all set for this weekend.
You mentioned the Japan America Society of Georgia. Obviously, Japan Fest is a big event you put on. What are some other things that group does, that company does?
The Japan America Society, or JASG, as we call it for short. We are a nonprofit 501c3 organization. And our mission is basically to bring together the Japanese and American communities here in our state. We do that through business, culture, social exchange, and also educational support, too. So we host all sorts of events and services to basically bring together the Japanese and American communities. So a lot of cultural workshops, a lot of business seminars with Japanese companies and American companies, and do a lot of work with actually schools that teach Japanese in our state as well.
And with the size of this event that you mentioned, it's the largest in the Southeast. Obviously, you're getting folks from all over the Southeast coming to Gwinnett for this event. But talk about Gwinnett County and the Japanese community, not just the Japanese community, but the whole Asian community is large in Gwinnett County. What is it about Gwinnett County that seems to bring everybody to this area?
I think just Southern hospitality. I mean, people here in Gwinnett are so welcoming, and the lifestyle here is definitely easy. So even from, people from as far away from Japan or anywhere in the, Far East, they can come here to Gwinnett County, and I think they can adjust fairly easily. I mean, it's a big change, obviously, but I think it's an easy lifestyle to kind of adjust to. And then the people here definitely are great. So, Gwinnett County is the fastest growing, I think, Asian population in our country right now. So, including Japanese, Koreans, and Chinese. I think Gwinnett County, they just announced three Japanese companies that are moving here just a few weeks ago, with Hamako, Ikaya, and also Odakaya. So it's definitely a great place, not just for individuals, but companies to move here.
So speak a little bit about the Japanese Chamber and being a Japanese business owner, specifically here in Gwinnett County. What are some things that the Chamber can help them with? And also, if you feel like it, also as a non-Japanese business owner, what would be some benefits of potentially going to a Japanese Chamber event, also coming to Japan America Society, the Japan Fest? How are businesses coming together? What are some of the things that the Chamber and the Society is looking to do to bring businesses together here in Gwinnett County?
Yeah, with the Japan America Society and the Japanese Chamber of Commerce, one of our main goals is to keep the Japanese business community happy here. So we do a lot to offer resources to make sure that they're happy here, both business wise, and make sure they know the difference between kind of various laws and how business is done here in the U.S. and then back home in Japan. So there's a lot of events done to kind of make sure, whether it's immigration issues or employment law or anything like that. We try to kind of be a resource to make sure that all the companies are aware of those type of things.
A chamber mostly is known for its networking and bringing businesses together, but with the Japanese chamber, there are cultural things that kind of underlie all of that. So I would imagine the Japan America Society, they go hand in hand. There's more than just, let's just bring a bunch of business owners together. There's cultural things. There's explaining how business gets done, like you said. There's a lot more to that. And that's a good place for business owners to start who are relocating
here. Right. And like you said, networking is huge for us in the Japanese Chamber. That's what we pride on, in kind of person-to-person business relationships. But, like you said, the Japanese business culture and the American business culture is certainly – it's a little different, I get to say the least. So
You're saying that with a smile on your face. I dare ask this question. Any good stories that can be shared on the air of just learning culture and maybe fun mistakes that have been made?
I mean, I guess there's a lot. There's a lot of things I could say off the air, but I guess I mean on there, just
I backed him into a corner with a tough question. I apologize, Yoshi.
Oh, no, but yeah, I mean, I guess the Japanese way of doing business is a little bit more more formal, certainly a little bit slower to make decisions. So when Americans who aren't, I guess, maybe aware of the Japanese business culture, you know, they may try to rush the Japanese counterpart into making a decision, and a lot of times that doesn't go too well. So. I mean, for the Americans that are listening, you know, you got to be patient with Japanese companies, and I guess it's here in the same in the U.S., but it's all about relationships, and you got to build that relationship first and build that trust, and then after that, you know, you have a long-lasting you know, business and personal relationship. So
instead of always be closing, we should always be considering and make sure that we make the right decisions.
Exactly.
So, sorry, Mike.
It's okay. We're talking with Yoshi Demoto with Japan America Society of Georgia and Japan Fest. And let's be clear, with the Japan Fest coming up, and again, the dates this year, September 21st to 22nd at the Gwinnett Center. And by the way, if you happen to be listening to this interview after those dates, don't fret. You can always, of course, go next year. As we've heard, it's been around for 27 years. It'll be around for number 28 as well. What are the plans for Japan Fest as it grows? What would you like to see happen as the years go by?
Certainly, I mean, grow in the number of participants and the number of vendors we have. We want to bring in more participants from out of state, I think. I mean, Georgia is great, and we have a lot of Japanese, you know, people and resources here. But it would be great to bring in more vendors and performers from other parts of the U.S. and also certainly from Japan, too. One of the things we try to do and pride ourselves on is to provide authentic exposure to Japanese culture. So you can't really get more authentic than bringing someone from Japan. So the more, I guess, we can grow internally and having more participation from other parts of the U.S. and Japan, and then certainly just getting more folks to come out to the festival and learning about Japan and its people and its culture, that would be great. So right now we're at the Gwinnett Center, and it'd be great. Maybe we can expand on that and then, you know, pretty much use up the whole space that they offer, and maybe even go to the arena and just keep expanding and doing more to promote Japan here in the U.S.
And obviously this will be well supported by the Japan community, but as you mentioned, it's a great opportunity for the non-Japanese community to come out and learn about the culture and learn more about Japan and so forth. Something I did not realize, Japan's the number one foreign investor in the state of Georgia. So it's not just Gwinnett County, but Georgia as well. Yoshi Demoto with the Japan America Society of Georgia and the Japan Fest. Is there a website? Is there a place people can go to find out more, find out about the performers that are showing up and all that kind of good stuff?
Yes. So the website for Japan Fest is www.japanfest.org. So just go to japanfest.org, and then you can find more information about all the performers, the performance schedules, all the restaurants that'll be there. So hopefully maybe Jay can go, get some more Japanese clients and then work with them to do more here in our state. But yeah, all the schedules, all the participants are at that website. And then there's a hotline too, 404-842-0736. If you wanted to talk to someone, if you have any specific questions about the festival as well. But we would love to have you. I brought some posters for you all and some tickets too. So feel free to use that, within your network, and it'll be great to have you on board this year.
Great. Well, we'll obviously give those some business leaders.
Absolutely.
And Steven, if you'd like to go, maybe if you're nice to me.
Wow. Of course, that be my bonus?
There you go. Let's give that date again. It's a Saturday and Sunday, September 21st and 22nd, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Saturday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Sunday. And again, if you're listening live, hopefully you'll be there this weekend. Or if you're listening to the show before the weekend, please attend. And if you happen to be listening to the show after this weekend,
go to the website and find out when it's going to be next year, because it's a great opportunity.
Absolutely. Is there anything else that we're forgetting about or you want to touch upon with Japan Fest coming up or Japan America Society of Georgia that you want to touch upon?
But yeah, just come to Japan Fest, learn what we're all about. I know this radio interview is exciting too, but you know that can't be just being there and then being part of the festival. So we would love to have you. Yeah, again, if you're listening to this after the festival, you know we do it every year. So just come back. It's every September. Next year we'll be back at the Gwinnett Center as well. So yeah. Just join us and I guess learn more about Japan and all we do here in the state. And actually, there's a part of Japan Fest called MIG or Made in Georgia. It's kind of a small trade show style area where Japanese companies present various products that are made here in Georgia. So Kubota, YKK, Toto, and some of those other kind of large Japanese companies have their products where you know people can see.
And I guess we'd be remiss if we didn't ask as far as the give us an idea of a ticket charge.
All right. So it is $8 per person. That gives you access for all day. And then it's free for children 6 and under. And then we do offer up to 50 free tickets for students. If the teachers do have to apply for those free tickets. But we do offer free tickets for K-12 students as well.
Great. Make it obviously be a learning session for students. Yoshi Demoto with the Japan America Society of Georgia Japan Fest, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you very much for having me.
Also want to thank, of course, Jay Bandy, with Goliath Consulting Group. See what happens when I don't look down? I just try to do it off memory. I'm getting so old.
Yeah.
This is sad.
It's all right, Mike. We forgive you. We love you.
Thank you so much. A quick reminder that Gwinnett Business Radio can be heard throughout the day on the Gwinnett Business Radio X station, and that you can listen to any of our programs 24/7 by logging on to GwinnettBusinessRadio.BusinessRadioX.com. For Stephen, I already see you reaching for those Japan Fest tickets.
That's right.
Actually, you are welcome to take your entire family.
You know,
if you'd like.
I'm always this way after most show, but especially after this show. I'm hungry.
Between the great Japanese
food and all the restaurants on Jay's client list, I'm hungry. Let's go eat.
Let's go to lunch right now. For Stephen, I'm Mike Salmon. We'll see you next time right here on Gwinnett Business Radio.